Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome back to Atlanta Business Radio. Stone Payton here with you and our special guest, because this is a special CPA edition of Atlanta Business Radio. We have back in the studio with us John Masters and our buddy from the Pascanner Media Conglomerate, Joel Pascanner. Joel, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. It's great to be back, and we're honored that you have us here. And as you know, we represent the Georgia Society of CPAs, and we are very grateful for them. We've been able to broadcast, I don't know, John, maybe about 10, 12 of these.
I don't know. It's been going on 2-3 years now, fortunately.
It's a long time, yeah. And we've got a special guest today, but I did want to put a little plug in for the Georgia Society of CPAs, which is the premier professional organization for certified public accountants within the state of Georgia. And we have almost 14,000 members throughout the state. And our primary purpose is to achieve excellence by providing superior advocacy, leadership, service, lifelong learning, and personal and professional development opportunities.
Now, are y'all still doing Margarita Mondays, or what's the new rhythm of meetings and stuff?
It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Tax season is probably every day of the week.
No change, same as before. Today, we are actually very honored. We've had guests before, but we have a special guest today, and his name is Howard Mosby. He is a representative to the Georgia House of Representatives, and he has been there since 2002, and I believe,
wow,
I'm just talking off the top of my head, I think that's two-year terms.
2 years.
So
correct.
He has been apparently reelected on five, six occasions.
You're a CPA. You got to get this number right. What's the math?
I'd say about six, well, and he's probably up for reelection now, and I think he's unopposed.
Well, he's unopposed, yeah.
So we're hoping he gets elected.
All right.
And Howard is really a native Atlantan, and
unlike some people we know.
Yeah,
that's true. He's a graduate of East Atlanta High School. He has his bachelor's degree from Georgia State University. He has a family with a history in politics and involvement. Mm-hmm. He is as I mentioned before, he's a member of the Georgia House of Representatives, and he is a member of the Ways and Means Committee, which sort of plays into some of the things we're going to talk about, because as we know, Ways and Means is involved in tax legislation.
And he's close to the money, it sounds like.
Yeah.
He is, and he's going to talk about that. Also, Health and Human Services and Governmental Affairs. So he's involved in all three of those mm-hmm. committees. He's on the board of the First Choice Credit Union and the Georgia Charitable Care Network. And I'm going to turn it over to him briefly, and maybe he can elaborate or correct any of the information I just gave, and maybe Howard talk about how you got involved, what prompted you to get involved in politics, and we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, I think he wants to know what you've been doing.
Yeah, the Mosby backstory, yeah. Man. Let's get it.
What's going on? All right. Well, again, thank you all for having me. This is an excellent opportunity for me to spread my wings and fly. This is my little bit of humor.
Very nicely. No, we'll put the laughter in post.
Well, you can sign and we'll laugh.
All right, okay.
You can tell he's a CPA, right?
That's right. Which is the most important part of the resume is that I am a licensed, certified public accountant. The most proud thing that I've done in my life, in my career, is get the certificate. And those of you who are out there who are have CPAs that are not members of the society, I admonish you right now, go and become a member of the Georgia Society of CPAs. It is an outstanding organization. So now what got me involved in politics, my father was a former county commissioner in DeKalb County, and I never was drug into the political arena. He actually shielded that from us. Which was interesting because just about every last one of us entered into politics. My sister sits on Atlanta City Council. I have an older brother who sat on the city council in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And my younger brother is a pastor, which really? Is also more political than all of us.
Time, yeah.
But just being involved in community things, and contrary to what people believe, I was actually asked to run by sitting representatives because they said that we need good people to come down here and work.
And I
was surprised. I thought that, you know, most folk that got into this were less than nice now. less than honest, so to speak. Although my father did serve, and he came home sometimes with horror stories, but I wanted to give back. I didn't think being an elected official would do that. And I was asked to run in an open seat. I would never run against somebody who's sitting in the seat, specifically now since I have seen this from the other side. But I got involved with running for a House seat in 2002, right after redistricting, when they had those multi-member districts. So you got a chance to run on a team, on a platform with other representatives. So I didn't have a hard time getting elected. So that's kind of how I got into this.
You go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to ask, were you at the hospital at that time?
That is correct. Now, so my day job is at Grady Memorial Hospital. We've done a great job down there turning that institution around. I started working at Grady in 1994 as an internal auditor. And at this time, in 2002, I was asked to do this. I was 8 years into Grady, not realizing the sacrifice, what it means to your career to be in politics. Because
how do you mean that?
What happens is eventually you become the politician in the room. So I'm not a healthcare expert sitting there. I'm an elected official. And right. And people tend to look at you as an elected official first before they look at you as a contributing member of a particular team. So you have to work harder to just prove that I deserve to be sitting in the seat, number one, and two, that the political experience that I have also has some value to the organization. So I didn't realize that on the front side, but you have to kind of manage both worlds, being an elected official and working full time for a company like Grady Memorial Hospital, who's always in the limelight. So everything you do has to be circumspect. And so you want to make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's. So.
Well, you stay really busy with the political side. It's hard to imagine that what that does to you time-wise.
Yeah, how do you balance? I mean, particularly these sessions run extensively, right? In January, February.
That's right.
But how do you do your job?
Well, you know, the upside is that it is Grady Memorial Hospital. So Grady is actually two blocks away from the Capitol. So there are times, actually most days, I go back to the hospital to go to work after session is over. On better days, I can go to the hospital before, then go to the session. Session starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then after that, we get out probably maybe noon on most days, mm-hmm. and then you have some committee meetings, and then you go back to, I can go back to work. If I were from Valdosta, I don't know how you do this.
Yeah.
You know, take
it's
off.
A real, and, right. It's a real strain for the people I know that live right. south of the border, so right. to speak.
What do they do? Do they go home or stay in town?
They stay in. Mm-hmm. So we adjourn. If you take the first month of the legislative session in January, we literally go in, they call the session to order, they do roll call, they have a couple of invites, and then we leave out of there. And you've burned a day, and you're not able to go back home to do any work, unless you can do it, well, you know, today's time, you can do it online or right. what have you. But if you have to have a job where you have to be there, you burned a day.
It'd be just about impossible
right.
to do.
Right.
Well, I guess it's been useful since so much of the state budget goes to health care that you're in a position to see that both from the funding side and the need to raise the funds for doing that.
That's correct. And and serving on the health committee, the chair of the health committee, Sharon Cooper, she actually relies a lot on my expertise being at Grady, on giving advice to her about things that a safety net institution would need. And it's worked out actually very well for me, works out well for the state and for the institution itself. We're able to advocate for things for Grady and anybody in the Medicaid population or issues that the hospital is trying to address from a legislative standpoint, that we're able to have a sitting, so to speak, healthcare expert sitting there to be able to answer questions. So it's worked out well for all of us.
But also, I mean, you are, I don't know how many CPAs, and I'm asking a part of the question. I mean, you're adding and providing I would think, a very different perspective. Certainly you're an mm-hmm. expert in financial matters, and I would assume the background of most of these people is not financial. I don't know what it is. How many CPAs and how do you use your financial knowledge? Do they seek it? Are they? Yeah. I mean, how does that come into play?
Great question. So in the Georgia House of Representatives, there are four CPAs that actually serve. Which the interesting thing about it, from an accounting standpoint, from a balance standpoint, there are two Republicans and two Democrats. But we are all aligned on financial issues concerning the state, concerning legislation that comes forward, anything that the society wants. We are always aligned in terms of moving that initiative or that legislation forward. On the Health Committee, I am the only CPA that sits on the Health Committee. It provides some support in looking at some of the healthcare financing, but a lot of the policy issues that we address, they really don't get into, on the Health Committee, into the down and dirty financial pieces of it, so that you can actually use your expertise in that arena, because you have a lot of individuals there who may have some connection to the healthcare industry, but not healthcare experts, if you will. So they try to keep the conversation at a higher level so that you don't, as we say, bore people to death with.
Well, being a member of the Georgia Society for a long time, I think four is the most, or maybe five is the most that I recall ever being down there at any given time.
And that is true. And these, well, we have individuals who served down there who either were accountants or had a license from another state that they didn't keep up or renew. But this is the first time that we've had four licensed practicing CPAs that are actively involved with the Georgia Society serving in the legislature.
Oh, you've been there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned Medicaid before. Grady has plays a great role in that area. And what is going on with the extension of Medicaid?
Yeah, you know, in this state, we decided to not expand Medicaid for a number of different reasons. I think that you're seeing a lot of rural hospitals take a big hit for how healthcare financing is happening at the national level and how those dollars trickle down to states. The Affordable Care Act will require states. I won't get too deep into the financing of this, but in disproportionate share hospitals that see a disproportionate share of the Medicaid population gets a federal add-on on their Medicare payment. And then there is this lump sum payment made to states for states that have a disproportionate share of the poor that they treat in the healthcare arena. And to fund the Affordable Care Act, they're pulling those dollars back to fund the Affordable Care Act. So states that didn't expand Medicaid, they're taking those dollars away from those states and shifting them to those states that did expand. And so the state of Georgia will see, or is bracing itself for, the reduction of these dollars coming into the state. There are a number of initiatives put on the table to try to curtail that. One of the things that the state really strongly looking at is this demonstration waiver to prove to CMS that they can actually get the same type of results without the going through the processes or the policy requirements out of the Affordable Care Act. The state of Arkansas has done that. There are a couple of other states that have demonstration waivers to CMS to say, give us the money and we can prove to you that we can get the outcomes that CMS is requiring from Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, let me not do these acronyms, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, that they require that's going to happen out of the Affordable Care Act. So the state of Georgia has some things on the table, but by 2018, we better have our act together.
Is that population getting bigger nationally and in the state, that group of people who are poor and need help to pay for health care, is it getting bigger?
It's staying relatively the same. The access to the insured piece is it's what's changing. There are a number of people who actually have qualified for Medicaid now who didn't know that they did because of this. So the state's resources are being taxed even more today than they have in the past because more people think the Affordable Care Act affects them now and that they can go out and get this insurance, not knowing that the state of Georgia hadn't really expanded Medicaid. So, but they find out they qualify and they get this health insurance and it's a draw on the state's budget.
If they add the, let me go to a different thing. On the United Healthcare is pulled out of some states. Has that had an impact on Georgia?
My understanding that caused a little blip in some of the coverage in for some individuals who were who had signed up under United in getting their health care under the Affordable Care Act. But the other providers out there are quickly trying to gobble those folk up. So, but there you can get into this piece of the delay between not having coverage here and finding somebody else.
Right.
And, you know, under the Affordable Care Act and your tax return, you got to make sure you got that continual coverage.
Was there, do you hear any conversation about other companies pulling out?
Not directly. You know, WellCare, WellPoint, which one is it? WellCare. WellPoint is the Blue Cross.
Yeah,
I think it's folk. WellCare is the 800-pound gorilla in the state of Georgia. I think they're here to stay, and they probably will take everybody that they can get their hands on. But some of the other lesser players like Peach State, they are having some challenges. They've actually focused on the children's care market, though.
I see. So if the program is extended in Georgia, what will that do to the state budget?
So on the front side, nothing. It will actually add more dollars into the state's budget to help support the cost of this expansion of this population. On the back side, when the state has to put up at least 10% or at most 10% of the cost of whatever that is, what will that do to the state's budget? People estimate that's another $1 billion hit to the budget. The question is, does the expansion of health care in the state of Georgia, does that bring an economic impact to the state? And there are some that say that there is that this economic impact, this activity, more docs in the state, more nurses, spending more money on health care, devices, things of that nature, will actually bring a lot more 5-to-1 on that $1 billion that we spend.
Well, what I'm learning here, and I guess I should have known it, maybe it's obvious, but the depth and complexity of these issues is so far beyond the conversation you have at the barbershop.
That's right.
So I guess I want to turn to asking about educating the constituents. And you know, and we come in different flavors, right? Mm-hmm. I live out in the suburbs. My wife has a real job. I'm not worried about the mortgage. I'm not worried about my next meal. I'm going to be able to, my health care, we're going to work it out. You know, no matter what you guys do, we're going to have health care. But I got to believe there are things that you wish my wife and I knew as constituents and that you wish your constituents in all these different areas knew and understood about some of these issues that is, I mean, there's got to be things that you wish we knew and you got to wish that you had some ways to communicate those, yeah?
Great question. And it's actually broader than the healthcare piece.
Yeah, that's just one thing, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You got immigration, you got education, you got all kinds of stuff going on.
And education and healthcare are probably, I look at education, and I'll get to your question. Education is, it's being run like the Public Service Commission. And that is, anytime Georgia Power wants a raise or a hike, they go to the commission. The Public Service Commission decides whether or not they get the raise or hike for whatever the reason is. and then they'll approve it or disallow it. But I think that healthcare and education should probably be treated like water. It's a natural resource that we need to ensure that people have access to make sure that our society continues to move forward in a positive way. Healthcare, although different from education, is the epitome of capitalism, and that is, there is absolutely nothing that you're not willing to sacrifice.
You better believe it. When it's yours or your loved one, you better believe it.
You will do. If I told you that I cashed out my 401k and I went to Cancun for a month, you will look at me like I'm crazy. But if I cashed out my 401k or I cashed out my child's college fund because I had stage 4 cancer, mm-hmm. then nobody looks at you like you're crazy. But it is those kinds of decisions that people are making. What I would hope that people could do, and I think that we as elected officials have done a bad job of this, and the political parties have too, it becomes almost like a sporting event. So my guy is a Republican, your guy's a Democrat, so now we are actually on the battlefield. And it really is, it's bigger than that, and it has more at stake than whether or not it's a win for my team because I am a Democrat and we won today. Because the game is played at such a much higher level than that. But the average person engages at that point. And it's a win-lose deal. You saw the issue with the Bernie Sanders folk fighting over the Hillary folk out in Nevada. Because it's a football match mentality. And it should be about moving an agenda forward. Whether or not philosophically you can agree or disagree on an issue in how our society moves forward. But at the end of the day, it's about moving our society forward. And we all have to be on that sheet of paper because we are all Americans. And we get into these games where we're fighting one another about...
it becomes like a reality show.
Yeah, and it's at a level that it's visceral, and we're not moving, in my opinion, as productively and as efficiently as we could do to move our society forward.
Well, I'll tell you that, I mean, the perception-wise, I think, to myself and even to most people, I think is that the partisanship is just so extensive at this level, even at a more local level, at a national level. And I think what you're saying, that's not the way it should be.
Correct.
And is it become such an obsessive concept, this partisanship, that it is at the point where it precludes or certainly discourages movement?
Here's the deal. So in the legislature, I would say 95% of the bills that we pass almost unanimously. There are those fringe issues. You get into the abortion versus religious freedom, these things that you get these polarized views on, that we get sideways on in the legislature. But for the most part, bills pass 160 to 20 or 170 to 1. And the problem comes in the streets. So it's not in the chambers, although it plays out in the chambers, but the problem is in the streets. And if I go back home and my constituents find out that I was working with Joel, he's the enemy. How can you work with him? I mean, that's because he's a great guy. I mean, we don't philosophically sit on the same side of the aisle, but he's a great guy. And his idea actually about this thing actually makes sense to me.
Right.
But you can't go home and say that, because in the streets, it's a football game. You helped Peyton Manning beat us.
Well, how does that develop? Is that the news media that contributes so much to that, or you know, how does that come about?
I personally think it's about winning, and as an elected official, the best and worst time is campaigning, and you get out in the street. In order for me to win, I have to differentiate my product from yours,
right?
And I use supporters to carry that message forward. And it has gotten to a point today that it is fanatic. It's fanaticism at play in the streets. But it becomes a albatross around my neck when I go back to the streets to say, this is what I've done. You did that with them. You can't do that with them.
Do you think that's the majority, or do you think that's a loud minority of people that are doing that?
Oh, that's a great question, too. We know in politics, 15-20% turnout almost can win you an election.
Right.
And so it didn't take a large number of people to actually be this way to move the needle.
But when you're politicking and you got to play to the emotion to get your votes.
That's exactly right.
And unfortunately, you don't have to do that this year because you're not opposed.
That is correct. Although, you get drug into these fights. It's the fanaticism piece. You know, you want to help me campaign, I try to stay out of a lot of this for that reason.
Right.
Because it's, if you're not in the race, one of the best things you can do as an elected official is pull back.
Just stay away from it.
To keep the rhetoric or nonsensical rhetoric down. So right. If I can use that.
Were you since you're involved with the health care, were you involved the session before and as going forward with this medicinal use of marijuana? And I had thought, I had read that there was going to be maybe some further developments in this session, and there wasn't with I don't know all the nuances of cultivation. And you can obviously have this oil, but you can't get it. And did it start there, and how did it evolve, and where do you see it going?
Now, we talked in the lobby about starting this marijuana company. Okay, no. Okay.
That's why I'm asking.
Now we know where Mosby's here.
We actually did a paper on that. Don Ariel and I did from Kennesaw State College a couple of years ago about what I was calling it. I wasn't the title of the article. It was Accounting for Marijuana or something like that. But I was kind of laughing at it at the time. And the next thing I know, it's part of the legislative agenda, which for medical purposes probably should be. And I tell people, I don't really know enough about the topic from the marijuana part of it. I don't know enough about it to be pro or con on the subject. I do understand what the law is about representing people who are in that business, but I don't know anything about marijuana.
That was a good answer, too.
That was a great answer.
I don't even know.
Are you running next term?
I'm not running. I'm furry if it's over here, and I'm against it if it's over there.
I don't even know what marijuana is. How do you spell it? great questions. There was an issue with a person. Representative Alan Peake had a constituent that had either a traumatic brain injury or something neurological that the only thing that actually seemed to work was this cannabis oil. In the state of Georgia, you cannot get it because it's illegal. The state of Colorado and state of Washington actually legalized the use of marijuana. California, I think you could do it for medicinal purposes. So in the state of Georgia, we were just trying to make sure that the oil can get used in the state. The problem is the oil itself is still illegal at the federal level.
Right.
And so to move the oil from somewhere that they make it to here is a violation of federal law. You are into drug trafficking.
Wow.
Right.
And so there was no way of, although we passed a law to say that you can use it, you can't get it. If you get it here, that's great. Now, so you can't grow the plant here. And so one of the things that was looked at this year to try to fix that was, certain institutions can actually grow the plant for this reason. They were going to set the state up into these regions, and they were going to give licenses out to, say, 6 companies to be able to do this. How many of us in this? It's enough of us to have. Okay. those individuals probably be filthy rich. But six licenses, but that didn't fly. People felt that that would open the door to overall legalization of marijuana in the state.
So because it's illegal federally, they'd have to grow it in here. The state.
Correct.
So that it wasn't transported across state lines.
Okay. Okay. Is that how the other states that have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes, like 11 states, is that how they deal with it? They allow
it grown
cultivation mm-hmm. within the state, and
that's
we don't, and
that's correct.
And we obviously decide, or there was not enough support to do you foresee right. that this will be addressed? And
I think it's going to come back. What I think is going to happen is that they're going to try to direct the development of the oil at the colleges and universities.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It seemed to me like we'd have institutions in the state set up for medical reasons, doing other kinds of research and so on, so that ought to be possible without giving licenses to grow. Because I know some people who'd love to have a license like that. They're not CPAs, but
yeah. But there was some pushback at the for folks in the higher education Board of Regents area about having those institutions tied into growing marijuana right. on their campuses. So that kind of actually stalled the bill. So they're going to have to come back next year with some fix that makes everyone happy or everyone equally uncomfortable.
What are some other ideas about doing it? I mean, you look at something like that and you think, well, if people have a bona fide reason to need it, then it really is not a good idea to try to prevent it. But, you know, I don't know offhand how they would do it. I'm sure there are other people coming up with ideas, though.
Well, I think that the best solution is at the federal level in allowing for interstate commerce. So even if the state doesn't want to get into the growing piece of it, if you can get it somewhere else and have it shipped here, it would be great. That would probably be the ideal solution. Probably the next best solution would be at some research institution set up specifically to handle this would probably be best. And then finally, having individual private businesses get into the development of. I would leave it at pharmaceutical companies that are actually doing this type of plant work in extracting drugs out and using those to
this is a perfect example, though, going back to what the average Joe constituent is not really aware. I mean, there are people in my circle of friends and family that their knee-jerk reaction, they would just react to the label or moniker of legalizing marijuana up until, you know, they sat down with you and had a cocktail and you explained about this constituents from one of your colleagues' districts. And they explained them, and then if you were to share some facts with them about the oil, it just the more informed and educated. But I guess we shouldn't lay all the responsibility on you guys to inform it. We should take it upon ourselves, take some personal accountability to be more informed about these issues. If we're going to say we're going to help elect people, we're going to vote on these issues, and we're going to talk at the barbershop or the grocery store about them.
That's actually correct. And getting back to the fanaticism piece, because it becomes easy to target you on you being a Republican or a Democrat, or you're a conservative, fiscal conservative, or a liberal. And at that point, that's all I need to know. That's who you are. I've boiled you down to this crucible and all of your issues in that crucible. And then therefore I don't have to really have any kind of research into what's going on, because whatever it is that you're pitching has to be bad.
I'm against.
and it should be as a citizen in this country and part of the state and in your city or county that you should want to know all sides of an issue before you decide that I'm going to jump on this side or that side.
So. Well, let me ask you, we're wearing the subject out, sure. But what's the difference between the cannabis oil, whatever it is, versus other narcotics that are used? I mean, we I'm sure transport
Maker's Mark 46.
Well, I don't even know the medical. I can't think of the medical term.
I was going to say, I don't know of any.
Oh no, I was just speaking to my drug of choice is Maker's Mark 46. I'm out. I got to stop and get some for the weekend.
Well, right? other than that one. The narcotics that you use for pain relief, I can't think of the names of it even now, but
ibuprofen. Why can't those chemicals?
Well, morphine, for example.
Okay.
Codeine.
Sure.
And that kind of thing. What's the difference in the two?
Well, first of all,
as far as transportation and so on is concerned,
the issue came. This goes back again to the current presidential campaign about the 1994 crimes bill, when they actually went through and really went after the low level drug dealer. And in order to do that, they started identifying certain substances as being, these are the most dangerous things on the street.
So it's on the list.
It's on the list. That's correct. Okay. And we're trying to get it off. It's a class 1, 2, 3, whatever the worst class drug it is. And you need to move that down.
I see. Well, that's good though, because it's interesting to me as far as what's the problem with using it for medical reasons. And that's the problem. And I've never really studied enough to understand why they couldn't do it. So,
I don't think the oil can get you high. That's the other side of it. And that's kind of where the disconnect is. And I think that people need to, or legislators, the politicians, but it's hard to go back home to say, I voted for legalizing this compound out of marijuana.
Right.
Well, it's like he said, it's education.
Right.
I mean, I heard the person you're referring to, that pool, was talking about, like you said, nobody questions if you take cash in your 401k or your education plan. And this person, I think, said, I don't even care if it's illegal.
Right.
I'm getting it.
That's exactly right.
Come and get me if you want. That's I need exactly it for my kid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can sympathize and empathize with that. And I think, like you said, I think it's education, because I don't understand why. anyway.
Well, and that's where you draw the line today. And if you had another conversation more in depth, again, you may draw the line a little further one direction or the other.
Right.
My point, I guess, in my question is, and what I'm saying to myself is, you got to be more educated about this, or shut up and don't have an opinion, one or the other, right? Instead of just knee-jerk reacting to it.
Well, or allow for some of the experts to have that level of conversation around.
Yeah, absolutely. And trust it.
Right. But it makes you think, too. I mean, I guess it's demographics, it's education. You have, I don't know, 4 states, maybe in D.C., where marijuana is legal completely.
Completely.
We're not even talking about medicinal. So, I mean, it's different. Educational levels, it's different.
So do you talk about this from 11 to 12 o'clock, and then at 1 o'clock you're talking about MARTA stuff, and then at 2 o'clock you're talking about healthcare, and then, you know, then over lunch it's immigration. There's a lot of different stuff. Do you have some organization around how you talk about this stuff and vote on it?
Well, after you tasted the marijuana, you
I would put that off to last at the end of the day.
Conversation goes in a whole lot
easier.
But Joel talked about in the beginning that I serve on Health and Human Services and Ways and Means and Governmental Affairs. So what happens is, the work in the legislature is split up in these committees. And so you have appropriations, you have economic development, you got health committee, you have motor vehicles. They deal with all the different sections of society are kind of broken down into these different categories. In this particular case here, it spreads across either the judiciary committee or the health committee to debate whether or not we're dealing with the legality of, or whether or not we're dealing with the health benefits of. So which committee, if the speaker looks at every piece of legislation and assigns it to committee, if he wants it to die, he would take medical marijuana and put it in something like economic development. Well, you know that's not going anywhere.
Right. So this guy has some power.
He has early on. That's right.
I mean, he can
shut
some stuff down early on.
That's correct. Wow. And so that's kind of how the work. So we'll get in at 11. We'll pledge allegiance at 10 o'clock, and then we'll have a pastor of the day, and then in the state of Georgia, a bill has to be read 3 times before it can be voted on. So the first time it's read is when you introduce it. The second time it's read when it's assigned to committee. After the committee does the work on the bill and they pass it out of committee, it comes back to the House, and then it's read that third time, and then that's when we take a vote on it.
Okay. Step two, though, when you say work on the bill, that's where some of the backroom stuff's happening, scratching out paragraphs, and somebody gives you a call and says, look, you know, can we alter it? I'm asking, is that how that works? Is there behind the scenes kind of rewriting it a little bit?
Once it goes to committee, that's when all of the advocacy, well, it could happen before that, but that's when the advocacy happens for or against a particular piece of legislation. And that's when you see the special interest groups come out and say, yeah, we want to see this happen or not. They'll lobby legislators. We get tons of emails on an issue for or against something.
And if I can, I like schedule a meeting with you, right? And I say, look, I'm with the, the broadcasting, I represent the Broadcasting Association. I don't know if you really understand the impact this is going to have on us. Couldn't we just, and then sometimes those are reasonable requests. And
absolutely.
You try,
Hey, we have those all the time. And that's exactly what happens in that process. I have a bill in that we're going to start taxing internet radio. Then next thing you know, you're in my office.
I'm knocking on your door, man. I don't know if you really understand.
Yeah, just giving you a little tip off.
So then, I perked up there.
Traction, yeah.
Yeah, then you send up your internet radio lobbyist.
Your lobbyist, right? My big dollar lobbyist.
Right.
So that's pretty much how it works.
I interrupted you. Okay, that's where there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, and that's why you then, when it comes out of there and they say, hey, we've got something that we think is, something everybody will take a look at and make a vote on, and then when you say read, does somebody stand up, read it, or they talk about it, or what does that really mean?
Yeah, so that actually,
you should see this sometime.
That's right, and it goes back to the time when the legislature was made up of folk that were mainly agricultural, and so a lot of them couldn't read, and so they didn't know what the legislation was. So at the time, they did read the legislation. Today, they only read the caption of the legislation. So House Bill 296 by Representative Masters to do XYZ. And then they go to the next one, House Bill 297 to do so and so.
Because you presumably have read it already, or you will soon.
You will, yeah, you will see it, or if it gets to your committee. So if things that are hitting committees that I don't serve on, I'm not really paying that much attention to at that particular point in time, because I won't have an impact on it, except as almost like you would as a constituent. But when it hits my committee, I'm concerned about, or if it's one of my other jobs in the legislature, a lot of things came to my mind one time. One of my other jobs in the legislature is that I am chairman of the DeKalb House delegation. So all the representatives that represent DeKalb County, we caucus together, and I chair that caucus of legislators. And we tend to... All of the local legislation affecting DeKalb County has to come through that caucus. We sign off on it before the House can vote on it. Well, I get inundated with all kinds of
any city bills,
city annexation,
everything,
tax. The city of Decatur, we just passed a bill this year to actually allow for the seniors in Decatur to age in place. It is the highest taxed city per capita for property taxes in the state. And there are a lot of seniors being priced out of their homes. And what we wanted to do was exempt them from school board taxes, because that's a lot of people moving to Decatur for the school system. And they're losing their houses because they can't afford to pay the tax. And so we want to exempt them from that. And we got a lot of pushback on that, because everybody wanted to jump on that bandwagon. Specifically in the city of Atlanta, folk wanted to use that same legislation for Atlanta. And the Atlanta school system couldn't absorb that type of loss of revenue, whereas Decatur had already programmed that dollar loss into their budget. So negotiating and debating those issues with my colleagues takes up an inordinate amount of my time, too.
And that's all the DeKalb County legislation has to go through that subcommittee in the legislature.
Wow. Now, if I had Bartow County, it would probably be that big a deal. But DeKalb, for some reason, right now, is a hot thing going. Mm-hmm.
Well, on one of the other interesting things that's been going on for a number of years is the change in the license, the titling of automobiles and all that kind of stuff. Now, I've got an issue going on now myself with one of those for a client. And that's, people don't know how that works.
They don't.
The people in the legislature don't know how it works. Well, it's interesting. So they wanted to get rid of the birthday tax. So now they got the welcome to Georgia tax, basically. You get a vehicle title after, or you buy a vehicle after 2013, you pay all of the ad valorem taxes up front at that point in time. And then only you pay is a tag fee every year after that.
Or if you lease the car too, I think.
Now, if you lease the car,
it's built in there,
right? So let's say I'm going to get this Lamborghini. I'm gonna lease it because I can't afford to buy it, but I'm gonna lease it. for whatever reason. That just, the applause signs should go up. Okay.
So we're applauding because you can't afford it.
I can't afford it. Well, because he's deducting it for business purposes.
That's why. I forgot about that.
I'm going to write off my campaign contribution.
Right. That's why we're applauding.
Even better.
So the tax on that is you charge that when you do the transaction right. for the lease, and then every month in the lease payment you pay the sales tax.
Embedded in there.
Okay. So that was a double taxation hit. So we fixed that in 2014 to allow for all the sales tax to not be charged on lease payments. The problem comes in when you buy the car. So I've already paid the tax on it once, and I'm going to pay for it again if I decide to buy the car today. And so I have to pay the sales tax again on that same car. If I lease the car in California and I bring it to Georgia, I pay the tax in Georgia. And then if I decide to buy it, I pay it again. So that's three times I paid the tax on this vehicle. And I think people are having a hard time trying to absorb paying for the same car this ad valorem tax every time I make this transaction. So.
Well, I mean, isn't there something to be said about equity of the situation rather than just the revenue?
I would agree. I think that there are individuals in the legislature that they thought that this was a great idea that fixed this every year you're getting charged this ad valorem tax. It was, from an accounting speak on this declining balance deal that you were getting charged the ad valorem piece. These one-time hits are really hurting individuals from being able to make these transactions. Now, in the state law allows for you to split that up into two payments, but even still, it is still a tremendous burden on most of the taxpayers that are getting caught up in this issue.
Who's actually been behind this change in the legislation? Are we fighting now or what?
I don't want to name names, I guess. Right, okay.
They got the light on me right now. Who is it? Who can we put our finger on? Yeah,
what's his name?
I think it was part of a broader package in terms of the looking at the budget for the state, looking at revenues and how the state could actually maximize some opportunity here. You get this gigantic lump sum payment on the front side, and then you get to work it out on the backside in terms of the expense, instead of this constant continual deduction or payment of revenues. I'm not going to name names. I will say that as House and Senate leadership thought that this was a great idea to tell people that they don't have to pay this ad valorem every year like they've been paying before.
Well, one of the things that I just run into recently is still going on is an elderly person moving to Georgia to assisted living from North Carolina. And you go to the insurance company and said, well, I need to get insurance. Well, you can't, I mean, I need to get insurance. Well, you know, you're a licensed driver. Well, no, he hadn't driven for a number of years. He's in assisted living, you know, which I said to start with. And so the insurance, well, you could put it in your in somebody else's name, but that's not correct. And so then you go to the county and say, we need to get the title transferred. Well, you got to get a license plate. So no, I don't want to get a license plate. You got to have a driver's license, and you can't get the license. You can't get the title transferred without the license. And well, we're in Georgia driving the car, and that's illegal because we've been here longer than 30 days. Right. So, you know, it's like the insurance company and everybody involved don't know how to get this this solved. And this is like the fourth year.
Yes, it
since
is.
Since this has mm-hmm. started, and the insurance companies don't seem to have a grasp on it too.
Yeah, it is a conundrum, and I think that it is something that the legislature would have to come back next year and address. There are too many these anecdotal stories that are out there that people are having problems with this particular law. One of the things about writing legislation, and it could be the best thing since sliced bread to you until you try to implement it and you find out that this is really problematic for this segment of the population that I didn't even see that coming.
Right. It doesn't mean it was malicious on your part. You don't even hardly know till you get it out there in front of people.
That
it's
correct.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also not deductible anymore, and it's an ad valorem tax, and it seems like a sales tax, and people don't understand that.
That would be nice to have a deductible. Yeah. So, but anyway, that would get you into tax reform, and that's another.
Well, I was going to, since I don't know how we're doing on time, but I thought we would talk a little bit, since Howard is on the Ways and Means Committee, about taxes, Georgia income taxes. Where do you, we've seen proposals.
What are you going to fix, Howard? What are you going to fix this year?
I don't like paying them. Let me say that.
Well, they talked about shifting it more to consumption. What do you see going on here, and what's going to happen?
You know, it's interesting. It's a pie, and you can slice this thing up 18 different ways, but it is still the same pie. So if I move away from individual income tax, it's going to go to corporate. It's going to go to sales tax. It's going to go to property. It's going somewhere, and because the state's budget, unless you're talking about reducing the state's budget and eliminating a tax together, the revenue and the expense side, just to change the revenue side doesn't really help you. It'll be a kind of a smoke and mirrors conversation. So we're gonna reduce your sales tax rate, but over here on the side, your property taxes are gonna go up. Nobody's gonna talk about that,
right?
But it looks like you pay less money in personal income tax. So and that's been the problem with tax reform in the state. You can't have a one-sided conversation. So we had, in Ways and Means, we had committees talk about tax reform, but there was no one talking about the
expenditure reform
on appropriations.
Right. You need expense reform, too.
Right. That's right. Well, all right. So where are you trying to go? And that's the other conversation that we haven't had. You know, so if the state of Georgia wants to be a major player on the national and the international stage, and we need to have XYZ assets out there for us working towards that, what is that going to cost? And if it's going to cost something to do, where are you going to get the money from to do that? And if it's not going to come from some entity outside of government, then government is going to have to generate that from somewhere. And so if I say I'm going to reduce corporate income tax, then it's got to be made up somewhere else in that equation. So,
well, I hear a lot more about tax reform than I do about expense reform.
That is absolutely true. Because the average, again, we get to this street fight.
Right.
That's what people, that barbershop, that's what they understand. When I get my paycheck and I see that federal tax withhold, that's the thing that pisses, I'm sorry. That's
a technical term.
It causes me to want to have a spirited discussion.
That's the thing that actually gets my goat.
Yeah.
So if I come and I say, I'm going to cut that for you, people say yes, and then I try to go get my car titled, and I'm paying now twice as much as I did. What happened?
How many taxes Georgia has?
That's a good question. No, I don't. How many?
I don't know. Okay. That's been on my agenda to determine that. I have done a few things about that, and it really is kind of amazing when you start just naming them off. There are plenty of them out there. But anyway, it's an interesting question. I thought Ways and Means Committee, you might know that.
Yeah, no, that would be a great primer for us to have that kind of, let me say this too, as for full disclosure, when I got elected, and as individuals get elected, there is actually no educational process in how stuff works.
Right.
And I remember I was telling the story the other day, when I first got elected, it was a hot issue going on. I don't know what it was. Maybe the flag or some predatory lending or something. So I got a reporter come to me and ask my opinion about something. And I said, let me say this. Before I got elected, and today I'm the same ignorant person that I was at the time. And just because I got elected and got this badge on didn't give me, by osmosis, some new level of knowledge to be able to articulate whether or not this makes sense versus that. I think a lot of times people assume because we are elected that we have this knowledge base that we really don't have. There are certain individuals that do have information, and there are individuals who've been around for a while who understand the process and they know stuff. But for the most part, unless you're a content expert in some area, you really don't know stuff. And we don't do a great job in in educating incoming legislators on simple stuff like how many laws do we have and how much is this or what is this worth or why don't we do it this way? Why are we reading the bills three times before we...
Well, there was a time when I thought the Carl Vinson Institute, that y'all go through a period when you're first elected, I don't know if you do that subsequently or not, I thought that's what they did. But is that not what they do?
No. Yes.
Yes and no.
I don't know who's listening. But yes, we still do that. I can tell you, I guess I'll talk about my own ignorance then. So I'll put this all on me.
Hey, you can use mine too.
For my colleague, in case any of those are listening, when I got elected, it's drinking out of a fire hose. Yeah. And so even though they may have said X, it didn't register. It takes an ongoing learning process to really get a hold of a lot of how the state works. There are agencies in the state of Georgia that I don't know how they work. What is it that they do?
Right.
And so it would be great to have that kind of knowledge in my back pocket. Now I can find that out, and I know more than most. But walking in off the street, you have no idea. I mean.
Well, you're rekindling an interest of mine.
Yeah, me too.
We've talked about it in the past, so that's interesting. Well, you know, today I looked at the financial report for last fiscal year ending June 30th. It was 324 pages long, and I say I looked at it. I literally looked at it. I didn't. It'd take all week to read it.
That's right.
And even then, I'm not sure that it was a comprehensive report from the state of Georgia for like a balance sheet and income statement like, you know, we're accustomed to seeing for businesses. But it is a lot to absorb.
Well, those of us who are in accounting or licensed know that governmental accounting within itself is a monster. I mean, different funds and being able to understand that the layperson coming in off the street, I can just imagine at the local level where you really get into the enterprise funds and restricted versus non-restricted that they would have a hard time understanding how these budgets are put together and where can I spend money from. You hear a lot specifically at the local level about the watershed management, and that's because they're able to move those dollars out of those funds and spend them differently because of what that, how those dollars are collected.
They're actually seeing that process.
That's right.
Right.
But the average Joe looking from the street, barbershop, they don't know why so-and-so took money out of this department over here and spent it over here. That mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense to them. It's just, they spent the money for this program that doesn't make any sense to them. And if you look at the state's budget, or if you look at the audit of the state's budget, from us as a legislative body, we wouldn't understand that thing. If it was done, we got the full blown report of what the audit report should look like. Again, it's an education issue. We do the best we can with what we have. It's amazing that society moves forward. You know,
it really is.
That's a statement I can agree with.
That's the call out for the transcript, right? Listen, before we wrap, where do you feel like you're going to put the vast majority of your personal energy and effort over the next, I don't know, year, 18 months, whatever's appropriate time frame? Where are you going to be putting your focus?
Well, again, for me, the DeKalb County stuff is taking up a lot of my time. We're now electing a new leader for the county, so we'll see how that plays out. It usually comes down to some new legislative agenda that we're going to have to carry out. And as chair of the delegation, trying to shepherd that through the process sometimes becomes a little tricky at best. Healthcare is another area where I expect us to see a lot of movement, specifically on with the changes in the Affordable Care Act and how those dollars shift away from the state of Georgia, how the state deals with that and how we're going to go through. You saw on the front page today where there's going to be an audit of DCH, the Department of Community Health, where the Medicaid budget is housed, to look for ways to eke some more dollars out of that department to see if we could help shore up some of the funding that we're going to lose, making sure that we've done everything we can as efficiently as we can to make sure we're not leaving any dollars on the table. So I see those two areas right now taking up the majority of my time. Governmental Affairs is another committee that we deal with that has deals with the election law. And this is where the city bills are coming through that particular piece of legislation and annexation. I know that's going to be a hot topic. There are a lot of areas that are trying to annex either into the city of Atlanta. There are areas around Jekyll Island in Forsyth County. There's a lot of confusion around how people can actually get into and out of cities. And that's going to take up a lot. That's what we do in governmental affairs. So it's I serve on problems. And then Ways and Means, tax reform, I still think is out there and it's going to pop its head back up again next year. I know John Carson, another CPA representative, is pushing for reducing the tax rate from 6% down to 4% on individuals. And I know that, again, has some effect on the budget, the revenue side that we're going to have to deal with. And that bill is going to come back next year. So so those are kind of some of the top things.
Well, you're going to be a busy man. Right.
Do you see, and I know we're running out of time, do you see coming back the religious freedom thing, the campus, see these things cropping up again or going to, are they to bed or are they still hanging around?
I think they're coming back again. So the legislative session is 2 years. The first year, if you don't get anything passed, you try again the second year. If the second year, it actually dies. So this year, everything dies. So I think everything will come back. Religious freedom will come back, specifically with the bathroom issue, that being out there. So you're going to see something come back around that initiative. The campus carry piece, you're going to see that come back. One of the things that the governor looked at in that bill and vetoing it was that you can actually carry guns in daycares, the way it was written. And I think that didn't sit well with him being able to say, you know, we need to do this. I think if it had stayed at a broader level, it would have been okay. What we introduced that had unanimous support was this called Pastor Protection Act, that ministers could actually do stuff and not be sued for not wanting to conduct certain programs with or certain events with certain individuals that they didn't agree with from their religious standpoint. But then when that bill cascaded into something more than that, that's when you got the Religious Freedom Bill, which caused the NBA, the NFL, and everybody else.
Hollywood.
Sometimes it seems to me like we'd be better off if you let the law be what it is and not try to pass a law that covers everybody in every single situation, because it gets very difficult to.
It does, and also one of the more dangerous things are one issue legislators.
Right.
So I'm going. My only focus is to end this, and that's great. But we pass 1,000 bills and resolutions in a particular year.
Right.
And you can't be singularly focused because those other things mean something to somebody too, and so we need to be a little. Once you walk into this arena, the visceral fight on the street is over. Now we're in here. We're now have to be policymakers. We're legislators. Mm-hmm. We move. We are the leaders that the people are looking to us to be the adults in the room to move this state forward. And we've kind of degraded from that. So
where can the constituents learn more about these issues, connect with you or someone on your team so that they can participate in the process? Is there a website or a phone number or an email, that kind of thing?
Absolutely.
So, or if they can write you a check for another election. I don't know. Whatever you need more.
Now you're talking.
Now we're talking about something. So, yeah. So maybe behind the building. I would go to the legislative website, which is legis.ga.gov. And you can go on that website and you will get to be able to pull up legislation. You get to pull up the sponsor of the legislation. You'll get all of the representatives and senators' office numbers, email addresses, if you need to contact them directly. It is a great website for it has all of the explanations, the house meeting notices, if you want to know when we meet, things of that nature is all sitting right there on that website.
And when you go there, read both sides of the issue, not just your guys, right? Just get the full picture.
Well, and call somebody on the other side of your issue. and just have a conversation, like I said,
yeah.
Have a conversation with them, and you'll get a better, get a feel for, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be confrontational, just say, I understand that you are against, or you're for X, can you just give me a little insight on how you got there? And just this is why I think this is the case. And then you can say, okay, well, that's great to know. I'm glad to have this conversation with you. Thank you. Goodbye. And then you can say, all right. So I heard him and I heard that. And I said, okay.
Well, that's an excellent point. I think the thing people don't do is recognize there's another side to every story and seek that information.
Then the truth is in the middle somewhere.
Probably. Almost certainly. Well, Representative Mosby, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio. We got to have you back sometime.
Yeah, anytime.
There's plenty of stuff to talk about, right? I mean, you talked about a half a dozen things that we didn't even get to. So quite sincere in that offer. Let's make that happen. Great job, guys. We got to do this more often. You're always bringing us great guests. And
we'll be back tomorrow.
All right. Well, until tomorrow or that next time, this is Stone Payton for Joel Pascanner, John Masters, our guest today, Representative Howard Mosby, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.